Market Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, it's Food Friday, and we'll put the spotlight on the humble egg. A cookbook author joins us to share tips on using fresh eggs from breakfast to dessert. First, social media apps like TikTok are starting to play a bigger and bigger role in the music industry. Many of the young up-and-coming artists at the Grammys last weekend found success through their popularity on the short-form video-sharing platform. And satellite radio, for example, now even has a dedicated music channel for songs that are popular on TikTok. What does this all mean for the music of the future? Want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you use TikTok? Do you enjoy the songs you hear on the app? Where do you discover new music? Is it on a social media platform, on YouTube, on a streaming channel, radio, record store? Tell us about it. Call 800-642-1234. And if you are a musician, if you create music, have you tried to harness the power of social media platforms? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Storm Glore is an associate professor in the College of Arts and Media at the University of Colorado, Denver. He's president of the International Music and Entertainment Industry Educators Association, associate member of the Recording Academy, and once performed with Sting. Storm, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. I'm honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, social media changes fast. I imagine the relationship between the music industry and social media changes pretty quickly, too. What is at top of mind for you right now when it comes to the way platforms like TikTok affect the music we end up hearing?
Well, I could take a number of perspectives in that case, but what's, you know, really amazing is our recent Grammy wins by, you know, some two creators who found fame on TikTok. And, you know, the history is, or at least the music business history is strewn with artists who struck it going viral on social media and even before that on platforms like MTV. So in a sense, we're seeing, no pun intended, the same song but a different tune when it comes to these platforms.
I want to check out a couple of those winners. The Grammy for Best Musical Theater Album was the unofficial Bridgerton musical. So it's a musical inspired by the streaming TV show Bridgerton. Here's a 23-year-old Abigail Barlow, 20-year-old Emily Bear, who started on TikTok.
A year ago when I asked the internet what if Bridgerton was a musical, I could not have imagined we would be holding a Grammy in our hands. We want to thank everyone on the internet who has watched us create this album from the ground up. We share this with you.
You are just as much as part of this project as we are.
Storm, you know, that story in the music world of, you know, hey, any kid out of anywhere could start playing music and, you know, make it big. Is that really how it's working on a place like TikTok now?
Well, not necessarily. In fact, your question is very timely because even major record label executives are questioning it these days. But the beauty of that Bridgerton musical TikTok event mm-hmm. is that it, you know, it's very imperative with social media that you get engagement. And this is engagement on steroids. What they accomplished by inviting users to contribute and create this this work as creators and create an album that could stand comparison at the awards, I think is really what we all dreamed of social media doing for music. It's created, you know, fans of that. It's received critical acclaim and very much in non-digital terms, an organic growth involving music fans. And that's what makes it so special.
I understand the engagement factor is a big part of this. So if I put a track on TikTok and a funny video, that alone isn't enough. What drives a lot of it is somebody else takes a bit from the song and does a dance to it, and somebody else does a cover of it, and it kind of multiplies and spreads, not just through my creativity, but through other people jumping on board and running with it?
Absolutely. And you know, there's this plus that comes with what TikTok is doing and really exploding is this idea of recreators. Folks who take a song that could be already popular and create a dance and send streams of that record to, you know, higher numbers, or folks that create something as whimsical and as crazy as the skateboarder who, you know, drank cranberry juice to dreams. You know, it's very exciting from both a fan standpoint, and, you know, it provides this opportunity to the music business that has added income and given some new artists some new opportunities.
Talking to Storm Glore, associate professor at the University of Colorado Denver, expert on the music industry, looking at the role of TikTok and other online platforms in how people find music, how people share music, how people recreate music. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Think about new songs, new artists you've discovered, maybe just over the last year or 2 years. Where did you first find out about them? Was it online? Was it on YouTube or TikTok or Spotify or Pandora or on the radio or from a friend? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Want to check out another big Grammy artist here, a nominee for Best New Artist, Olivia Rodrigo, the winner of that award, 19-year-old, won Best Vocal Album and Best Pop Solo Performance for her song Driver's License. Here's a bit. Guess you didn't mean what you wrote in that song about me. You said forever, now I drive alone past your street. Now, Storm, this isn't just an online phenomenon. Rodrigo's songs had plenty of mainstream popularity on the charts. Do you expect to see a lot of that hybrid thing? Now, as you mentioned earlier, the music industry paying attention to social media.
Oh, absolutely. In this artist's case, as you say, those songs were already gaining ground at radio and other platforms, but fans recognized these, I guess you'd say, TikTok-ready songs, and Olivia put out several of them that exploded her sales and again, took it just to a new level instead of just breaking the record, so to speak, for her. And but, you know, ultimately, one argument against this idea of social media breaking artists is that it's going to come down to the songs. Ultimately, they have to be right. And whatever however they are interpreted, it's still going to have to be meaningful songs that are going to ultimately, you know, really sink in with music consumers. And this is a classic case of that with Olivia Rodrigo's music.
You just used a phrase, TikTok ready songs. What does that mean?
Well, I'm not going to name names, but there are certainly artists out there who create songs using the right beats to create a dance, using the right lyrics to, you know, that will people will relate to. And with any medium, artists can tend to start creating songs with an effort to break into that media. And I mentioned earlier, you know, that this is very similar to, you know, what happened in the early 80s with MTV. All of a sudden, artists are making exciting videos with the pure intent of getting them played on MTV. And while if we knew the correct formula, we'd all be millionaires, that is artists. It's sometimes, you know, you're taking a gamble, but when you go down that lane of creating something to make it TikTok ready, you bear that risk.
I could see some musicians looking down on that idea. Oh, you're selling out to TikTok. But, you know, if you wanted to get something in top 40 radio for years, you better keep it under 3 minutes. If you want to have your chamber music ready, you better write it for the rest instrumentation, the right instrumentation for whoever's supporting that band. Music's always had some element of that, right?
Absolutely. One thing, I did a research project on lyrics on pop songs, and the introductions, the intros to pop songs were as long as a minute in the 1990s. But now, with the case of social media being, you know, a marketing platform that you got to be on, your intros, before you start singing and add vocals to a track, they better happen within eight seconds or even less. And there you have just what you say. It, you know, marketing can drive the creation of the song in that way.
Is that because we have the power to quickly click to another song if that 8 second intro didn't grab us?
Yes, absolutely. I what I'm referring to is information put out by YouTube as to how quickly a listener will click out of a song, which is, you know, just like the equivalent of FM radio not wanting you to switch stations in your automobile, right? You don't want to lose them. And so that's why you've got to be quick, because, and I'm not going to, you know, some people would comment on the short attention spans of music consumers. And I don't think it's that. I think there's just so much more music for you to listen to that it's there for you to click on. It's that easy. So yeah, you've got to keep that in mind.
We're talking to University of Colorado Denver media professor Storm Glore about how TikTok and other online platforms are influencing the music industry. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. If you watched or followed the Grammys last weekend, how many of the newer artists were you familiar with? Did you know them through social media? Do you find music through TikTok or YouTube? What do your kids do, if you know what they do to find music? Let us know. 800-642-1234. If you are that kid, love to hear from you too. 800-642-1234. Call in now. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up here on Central Time. I told you long ago, on the road, I got what they waiting for. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. That's Industry Baby by Lil Nas X, another artist who rose to fame in large part because of his popularity on the social media app TikTok. We're picking up our conversation now about how the music industry is being influenced by social media and trying to influence social media to play their stuff. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Not a lot of TikTok users out there. Maybe have you checked it out to try to find music? Is it baffling to you? If that's not where you find your music, where do you find new stuff? Or do you avoid the new stuff? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Storm Glore is an associate professor in the College of Arts and Media at the University of Colorado, Denver. Ed Storm, we just heard Lil Nas X there. He is an artist who really, again, it seems like came out of nowhere with a track largely on TikTok. Could you talk about his rise to like this really high level of musical prominence?
Yeah, this is a fantastic story. An artist who's sort of down on their luck and struggling and has this Old Town Road, which is breaking a lot of barriers down with its mix of country and hip hop. And as I mentioned earlier, sometimes the quirkiness, sometimes the originality and the vast amount of creativity behind a track will make it go viral. And that's what happened. All of a sudden it was out there. But what's interesting about Lil Nas X, and as we know now, you know, almost 2 years later, he had the talent behind that song, and he's been able to cachet that into, you know, other songs, and is certainly, you know, though it started with Old Town Road, he's proven that he wasn't just a one hit wonder.
Now, timing can be weird on these things. Some songs and artists that don't make it right away might get a second life. Here's the band Glass Animals. They put out their song Heat Waves in 2020. Didn't peak till over a year later. It reached number 3 on the charts last November, thanks in large part to social media. Here's a quick listen. Sometimes all I think about is you. Late nights in the middle of June. Heat waves been faking me out. Can't make you happier now. Sometimes now, Storm, Glass Animals, nominated as Best New Artist 8 years after they released their first album. I don't know how exactly.
Yes.
That's a weird category. But these songs, and you mentioned earlier Fleetwood Mac, those young kids there, a 1977 song, Dreams. Also, like, things can just kind of spin out of nowhere after initially disappearing.
Yes. And I think the Glass Animals story is real interesting. I know they came through here quite a bit, touring in their early stages of their career, and I think their first EP came out in 2012. So you're right, it's taken so long, but social media made a difference with that song Heat Waves in absolutely putting them into the mainstream map. This also happened with Portugal the Man a few years ago with Feel It Still. And so sometimes you see these artists take off because of social media, but they didn't just start out yesterday by any means.
Now, you work with the Grammys, Storm, so I'll ask you, what is the deal with that new music category? What determines newness of a band in that category?
Oh, I could spend a long time talking about that, but you know, we do have a history of that happening. I remember when I was at the Grammys the year the band Fun won the Grammy, and the lead singer got up and said, you know, we've been going at this 12 years, which was very telling for getting the Best New Artist Award. But in actuality, that's the route you want to go. I wish luck to any artist trying to strike it rich on social media with their first hit. But artist development is still the key in the music industry. Putting out two or three albums before that hit happens is actually beneficial, as you might imagine, growing that audience organically and reaching that success slowly but surely and finding your niche and everything is what happened with Glass Animals. They found where they needed to be musically and have capitalized on it, but they were not an overnight sensation by any means.
Talking about music, how it's created, how it spreads now, how the music industry and TikTok and other online platforms play off of each other. Storm Glore stays with us from the University of Colorado, Denver. Still time for you to call in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. If you have a story to share, do you listen to music with other people in the car, at the office, in your house, or is it a solo personal experience for you now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Storm, is it just me? Is there just like so much more music now than there used to be? Like it used to be, you had a handful of categories. You found the radio station that matched it. You had a common interest with people who listened to that same station. Now you can really seek out just about anything.
Absolutely. I tell my students all the time that it is just a fantastic time to be a music fan. You can find the music you like communally with your fellow fans that you meet online. Whatever genre appeals to you, however small the audience might be for it, an artist can now find that small audience, and those audience members, you know, can, and again, form those communities through social media. So it's a great time to be a music fan. Now, on the other hand, it has greatly increased the competition for artists. They are fighting now with, attention from versus these bigger artists who, you know, practically monopolize a lot of the traditional marketing platforms. So it, at the same time, it's tougher and more challenging for musicians to break through with all the competition. And the barriers to entry are absolutely lowered, as witnessed by these social media platforms. Anybody can post a video. So it's good and bad.
I feel bad when I talk to music writers and music critics, because I have no idea how they keep up with their jobs, given all the music out there. How do you, as someone, really connected and interested in the music industry, what is your process of discovering new music that you like?
Oh, personally, I look to my friends. I'm always asking, through social media or in person, I'm always looking at what other people are listening to. And I tend to try to listen to as much as possible too, until something, you know, hits me right. But I don't know that I'm average in that sense, but it again is there's so many platforms and there's so many ways to hear it that you could probably get 100 different answers to that question. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And do you give more than that 8 seconds to let that song kick in?
I do, but I'm old school though. I'm old school. So I definitely check it out. But you know what's interesting about, you know, how we find music and you know, that we have so many more ways to hear it. I think still consumers only have so much mind space. I did a research study on one-hit wonders, which is very relevant, you know, to what's going on. And typically the amount of artists, new artists every year, has been about 50%. It's anyway from 48 to 52%, you know, if you look at it. But what's interesting is it's so consistent year to year. And what that tells me is that consumers can only, you know, take so much music. I mean, you could say there's so many there's only so many hours in the day, but we tend to, with our favorite songs, only have so much mind space. And that makes it difficult.
Now, if you and I had this conversation a year from now, I don't know, things could be pretty different. What are the trends you are watching for in this next year?
Well, the trend of engaging fans more in this recreation process, I think is a promising trend for the music business, as labels can find more ways to let fans remix, recreate, create a dance to, or anything with the music and the content they're putting out. It's going to be better for all of us. And a recognition from artists that they can see that it's not just about putting a song on a social media platform and hoping it goes well and goes viral, but constantly communicating with your fans and producing more content more often. I think all of these things are promising trends that artists have latched onto and record labels are focused on, that I think make it even a better fan experience. And I think it's an exciting time ahead.
Storm, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Rob. Appreciate it.
Storm Glora is an associate professor in the College of Arts and Media at the University of Colorado, Denver. He's also president of the International Music and Entertainment Industry Educators Association and an associate member of the Recording Academy. He joined us for a look at the latest in the music industry, how it's changed a lot because of TikTok and other online platforms and how it's trying to work with that. Coming up after the news, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. We'll talk with a fifth-generation chicken keeper about using fresh eggs in the kitchen and get lots of recipes, too. You can call in with your questions, your favorites, and I'm hoping we'll hear from some people with those backyard chickens about the eggs you get and what you do with them. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a UW System student survey on free speech was supposed to go out yesterday, but was postponed at the last minute. We'll learn more about the survey and why it's been delayed. Now, whether we're making breakfast, dinner, or dessert, there's probably a good chance to use eggs. They're one of the most versatile ingredients out there, and we're talking about them this week on Food Friday. Our guest is here to share some creative ways to use eggs, especially fresh eggs that we get at the farmer's market or maybe our own backyard. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite way to make and or eat an egg? Fried, scrambled, poached, baked, something else? What tips have you learned over the years for getting eggs just right? Do you have questions about how to make eggs in the best way? And do you raise your own chickens? What's that been like for you? Do you notice a difference between fresh eggs and less fresh eggs? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Lisa Steele is a fifth-generation chicken keeper, a master gardener, and creator of the blog Fresh Eggs Daily. She's the author of several books. Her latest is the Fresh Eggs Daily Cookbook, over 100 fabulous recipes to use eggs in unexpected ways. Lisa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, raising chickens has been part of your life since you were a kid and something you came back to as an adult. What led you to devote yourself to sharing knowledge about raising chickens and what to do with the eggs?
You know, it turns out that there are a lot of people interested in it. I started as an adult back in 2009. It was the recession. A lot of people were looking at where their food was coming from or worried about it and out of work. And backyard chickens started to really grow in popularity. And we're kind of seeing that again over the last 2 years. There's been a huge interest in raising backyard chickens. And I thought it was time to write a cookbook to help people know what to do with all those eggs.
You say right away in the book, fresh eggs are going to be better to cook with. They're going to taste better. They're going to cook better. Why is that? Why is there such a difference?
There really is a big difference, and it's because as an egg ages, it loses a lot of moisture through the pores in the eggshell. So as the egg gets older, it's not going to taste good. It's going to be drier, not as full of water, and also the white thins out and the membrane around the yolk thins out. So for example, when you're frying an egg, when you drop that egg into the pan, if it's super fresh, it's just going to stay there. If it's an older egg, it's going to spread out all over your pan, which of course you don't want.
Not all of us are going to have chickens in the backyard. For people who don't, what is your best advice on finding the freshest possible eggs?
Absolutely. Your own chickens are the best. I definitely have to say that. But drive around your neighborhood. I would venture a guess that there are some of your neighbors who are raising chickens and might have a fresh egg that sign outside. Go to a farmer's market or to a small specialty. Some of the more upscale grocery stores will stock local eggs. Or if you do go to a regular supermarket, you can look at the end of the egg carton for the secret code that tells you how old the eggs actually are. And once you know how to read that code, you can easily pick out the freshest off the supermarket shelf.
How do we read that code?
So it's a three-digit code on one end of the egg carton from 001, which corresponds to January 1st, all the way to 365, which is December 31st. And that's the day of the year that those eggs were put in that carton. So you want to look for the highest number, which is going to be the day closest to the current day.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Lisa Steele, creator of the blog Fresh Eggs Daily. She has chickens. She therefore has eggs. She has a new book out called The Fresh Eggs Daily Cookbook, over 100 fabulous recipes to use eggs in unexpected ways. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your egg cooking questions. There are a lot of things that a lot of us do wrong, it turns out, including me. 800-642-1234. Or if you raise chickens yourself, love to hear from you, your story, how you got into it, what you do with all the eggs. 800-642-1234 is the number, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's talk about some of those things that some of us do wrong, Lisa. Now, this one I've done. So I crack the egg on the side of the bowl, of course, and then drop it right into my batter or whatever. Two mistakes right there. Clear me up, please.
Yes, two mistakes. Yes, so you should always crack an egg on a flat surface. When you use the corner of a counter or the corner of your bowl, you risk pushing little pieces of the eggshell or whatever bacteria is on that shell into the egg, and nobody wants that. So that's your first mistake. So always on a flat surface. And then the second mistake is cracking right into your batter or whatever you're making, because if that egg is bad for some reason, or if you do have pieces of eggshell, they're going to be really hard to get out of the batter. So you always want to crack an egg into a small bowl separately. The mistake you didn't make, though, that I have made, is cracking an egg and then right over the stand mixer as the mixer is going.
Oh.
Because if that mixer catches the eggshell, you will never get it all out of your batter.
Wow. Yeah, no, that one I have not done. You also talk about, and I didn't know this, it sounds like especially for baking, but for some purposes, it matters what temperature your egg is when you start. Like if you're just pulling it out of the fridge, what's the rule for that?
It really does. You know, as much as ingredients matter, the temperature of ingredients matters. So if it calls for cold butter, you want your butter to be cold. If it calls for room temperature eggs, you want them to be room temperature. If you're adding cold eggs to a batter or a mix, it's going to cause the fats in that to seize up. So it's not going to mix up as well, and things aren't going to incorporate the way that they should. So if it does say room temperature, milk or eggs or whatever it is, they should be at room temperature. And I mean, it's not a lot, although I always forget myself, but 30 minutes out on the counter should bring that egg up to room temperature.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. David starts us off in Iron River. David, hi.
Hello. Yeah, I'm calling. As I told your screener there, kind lady, I might add, I've been raising chickens really since Shep was a puppy. You know, that's a long time, about 60 years. And I found, back in my old pulp peeling days, I was peeling pulp. I would make egg sandwiches. I'd cook up four eggs the night before. I found the best way to cook egg sandwiches, and there's nothing better than a good egg sandwich, in my opinion, is You cook them on medium heat, and the fresh eggs. I listened to your lady talking there about how when a good egg gets in the pan, it doesn't run all over the world. It kind of stays with you. The yolk sits up nice. And if you've ever grown, had your own eggs and your own chickens, I certainly know what she was talking about. And the yolk is brighter. It's oranger. And I just wanted to say that, you know, none of our old girls ever die except natural deaths at our place. And we keep them, and we get about 5 or 6 eggs. We don't have a big flock, but they are just outstanding. And, you know, I'd like to read the literature this your host has put out there, your host lady. And
David, thanks a lot for sharing that story. David really is into those eggs. He pre-makes an egg sandwich. We're used to what he worked, pre-made an egg sandwich to bring into work with them. Lisa, do you have thoughts on the best way to, you know, because you're not going to fry up the eggs at work, at most workplaces, right, unless you work at a restaurant, I guess. Do you have thoughts on, you know, pre-preparing something like that?
I mean, I think that's a great idea. I don't think there's anything wrong with making an egg sandwich at home in the morning and, you know, putting the cheese on and everything, and then maybe heating it up when you get to work. I mean, I never really thought about that. I kind of think of as hard-boiled eggs as what you would maybe travel with. But I think making an egg sandwich is great.
David, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Marcus joins us now in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi. So, I've had this debate going on with a couple of people and never really quite come to a good answer. So I was hoping maybe your guest could help us out, Rob. The question is should an egg be, you know, like kind of pre-rinsed or pre-washed before being cracked, just in case, like you said before, like you have a piece of shell fall in there? I mean, I always figured that if you cooked it hot enough, it would kill the bacteria, hopefully. But I've heard both ways, and I guess I was just wondering for some input.
Marcus, thanks for the call. I got to say, Lisa, I don't think I've ever pre-washed an egg. Should I be?
Well, commercially, store-bought eggs have been washed before they're put in the carton, which is why they have to be refrigerated. So if you're buying commercial eggs, no, you don't really need to wash them. But if you are raising your own chickens or buying from a neighbor or a farmer's market, yes, it's a good idea to rinse the eggs in warm water just before you use them. That kind of rinses off any bacteria that might be on the shell. And, you know, that's it's just good practice. There's nothing wrong with washing commercial eggs also, but it is important if you do have fresh eggs that you rinse them off just before you use them.
Excellent. Marcus, hope that resolves the debate for you. It's Food Friday. We're talking to Lisa Steele right now about her book, The Fresh Eggs Daily Cookbook. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your favorite way to eat eggs? Do you have a cooking problem you need solved when it comes to your favorite eggy recipes? Do you have access to farm fresh eggs, whether that's your own farm, your own backyard, or maybe your neighbors or that farmer's market? Do you notice the difference in how they cook, bake, and taste? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll have a recipe or two coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our Food Friday talk with Lisa Steele, author of the book The Fresh Eggs Cookbook, over 100 fabulous recipes to use eggs in unexpected ways. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your favorite egg-related recipes, your egg questions, and let us know if you have a backyard chicken operation going on. 800-642-1234. You can find some recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. And Lisa, before we go back to our callers, let's check out a recipe now. Now, I love a squash and I like eggs. You've got baked eggs in butternut squash rings. These look pretty cool. How does this come together?
Really beautiful, but if you do love squash, it's a different way to make it. You basically slice your squash up, cut out the seeds and all the guts inside, and then little olive oil, salt, and pepper, bake them till they get a little bit soft, you know, not completely cooked, but then you want to take them out of the oven, add an egg, add a little Parmesan cheese, a little more olive oil, salt, and pepper, then back in the oven until the egg is cooked to your liking. You can do jammy, runny, you know, hard cooked, whatever way you like your yolk. And then I like to have a little bit of fresh sage with them. I think sage and eggs go really well. But it's just a really pretty, nice, dinner, especially if you're trying to not eat quite as much red meat, or if you have people coming over for dinner who might be vegetarian, because it's pretty hearty. You know, squash or they stick to your ribs.
And it sounds really easy, too.
Yes, super easy.
Awesome. You can join in at 800-642-1234 as we cook with eggs. Irene is with us now in Phillips. Irene, hi.
Can you hear me?
Yep, you're loud and clear, Irene. Go ahead.
Good. In my hands right now, I have a picture of a little boy with a chick on his shoulder. My cousin Lori's husband came home one day in Chicago and said, I bought a dozen eggs from a farmer, fresh eggs. Here they are. And she heard noises in her refrigerator, put one on the windowsill to bake in the sun, and a little chick popped out.
Wow.
And I think you have to be concerned about that once in a while. And I've never bought any since then, and my cousin Lori never did either. So thank you for listening.
Irene, thanks for the call. I guess that's something people want to avoid, Lisa, hatching the eggs they're planning to eat?
Yeah, well, yes, definitely. You know, we have a rooster. We collect eggs every day. They go right in the fridge. It takes 3 weeks at pretty elevated temperatures near 100 degrees for a chick to develop and then ultimately hatch. So definitely something was going on wrong there in the whole process from the coop to the carton, let's say.
Irene, thanks for sharing that with us. Aaron joins us now in Kenosha. Aaron, hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What'd you want to tell us about, Aaron?
Well, I could talk about eggs all day. I've got my own flocks of ducks and chickens both, and I've got a million uses for them. But in fact, I'm having omelets tonight on Meatless Friday. But so my question is, and I've researched this but never gotten a clear answer, after peeling 3 dozen duck eggs this morning, what's the best way to peel those doggone things after you hard cook them?
Man, oh, man, Aaron, I'm right there with you. I have difficulties peeling them well, and I do like hard-boiled eggs. Lisa, what's the secret?
Yes, I love this question because I get it a lot. Fresh eggs are hard to peel because air has not had time to get into the egg to push that membrane away from the shell. So the common advice is to just let the eggs get old, but who wants to eat old eggs? So you want to eat your eggs fresh. The trick is to steam them over simmering water. So in a double boiler, a colander, something like that, steam the eggs for 12 minutes, duck eggs would be 20 minutes. And then you want to put them right into ice water until they're cold enough to handle. And even eggs laid that morning will just peel like a charm. It works for either chicken or duck eggs, either 12 minutes or 20 minutes.
And you mentioned steaming instead of boiling the
mm-hmm.
eggs.
Yes. And another benefit is sometimes when you're boiling eggs, they bounce around a little and they crack open, you know, while they're cooking. So when they're steaming, they're just sitting quietly in the steamer basket. So you don't get the cracked eggs. You don't get the broken eggs, which is also nice.
Thanks again for calling in and sharing that, Aaron. Oh, one corollary here, Lisa. If I do have some eggs and I look at the code and they're kind of older, is boiling them probably one of the better uses for them?
At that point, yes. You know, they're going to peel well if they're older. So you could hard boil them. You can use them as egg wash or something like that. You know, I wouldn't necessarily try to make a souffle or something where the egg really is the star of that dish, but to bread some eggplant cutlets or chicken cutlets or something like that, they're going to work just fine.
We are talking about eggs on this edition of Food Friday. Lisa Steele is with us. Her new book is The Fresh Eggs Daily Cookbook, over 100 fabulous recipes to use eggs in unexpected ways. Still time for your call with your favorite egg recipes, your egg stories, your experiences, your egg experiences, raising chickens in your own backyard, 800-642-1234. I'll show myself out. Kim is with us now in Iowa. Kim, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to tell us about, Kim?
Well, I'm calling in reference to how to take your eggs to work. I'm older, and when I was young, we would go to mass before school, and we were not allowed to eat until after communion. So in the morning, we would take an egg, we'd whip it up. We called them pancake eggs, but really they're omelets, one egg omelet, and you put it on bread and good butter, wrap it in wax paper, and then it's ready to go. It's delicious.
Excellent, Kim.
And
thanks.
I still make those.
You do. Kim, thanks for sharing that with us. Lisa, she mentioned these are effectively omelets. Do you have a favorite omelet secret to share with us?
Oh, I love making omelets. I think the secret is to use enough butter and to keep the temperature low because you really don't want to brown the egg. You just want to cook it, not use too many eggs, like she mentioned, just one egg, swirl it around in the pan. And I just like to do a trifold, so you flip over both sides, even with no filling inside. If you have a nice, delicious, fresh egg, it's going to taste wonderful.
Thanks a lot for sharing that egg memory. David joins us now in Port Edwards. David, hi.
Hi. I'm just calling in regards to people in peeling a hard-boiled egg. My experience is to have cold water, take as many eggs that you're going to boil, like say six, and boil it, bring it to a boil, turn off the heat, cover it, 2 minutes per egg, and then over 12 minutes it'll harden up. And then after that, drain the water, put cold water in it, let it sit until you get it handy, and then you can peel it right away with cold water.
David, thanks a lot for that call. And I got to say, Lisa, when I've researched online to find the secret to boiling eggs and peeling them, I found like 50 different answers. Your steaming one sounds pretty good, and I've never tried that, I got to say.
I think it's some kind of egg magic, but yes, I tried almost everything researching my book, and just because we do have so many eggs that I try to hard boil, and the steaming just works every time. I swear by it.
All right. Thanks a lot, David. We'll go to Bryce now in Arkansas. Arkansas, Wisconsin, I should say, not the state. Bryce, hi.
Hi there.
What'd you want to tell us about Bryce?
Well, I wanted to mention that a number of years ago, there was a farm a few miles from me that I used to drive by periodically, and there was a sign in the yard there that was advertising their wares and services. The sign was small hand-lettered sign. It said, "Fresh eggs will sharpen scissors."
So fresh eggs will sharpen scissors.
Yeah, and I just wanted to ask the guest if she's ever tried that, how it works to sharpen scissors with fresh eggs.
I'm gonna guess, thanks, Bryce. I'm gonna guess, Lisa, probably not.
I have not, but I love that sign, and that's why we all need to pay attention to our punctuation.
Bryce, thanks a lot for sharing that. Lisa, I gotta say, one of my favorite ways to eat eggs is fried with some runny yolk, like on a sandwich, which you can't take it to work because it's way too messy. Do you have some advice for us on making the best fried eggs?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I like, whether it's, hard boiled or soft boiled, I like a jammy egg. I like it to be a little bit runny. I think if you fully cook it, you're kind of missing out, but it does kind of make a mess. But I mean, there's nothing better than making an egg sandwich with a runny yolk, some really great cheese, maybe some Wisconsin cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Nice toasted piece of rustic bread. You can even put some pesto on, something like that. You really can't go wrong with an egg sandwich with a lot of cheese.
Butter or oil for frying that egg?
I'm going to say butter just because it adds so much flavor. But I do a combination sometimes, a little bit of oil with a little bit of butter.
And as we wrap up, just in our last minute or so, Lisa, what if you had to make a dinner, a fancy dinner right now, what would be your egg-led dinner?
Oh, I would have to say Eggs Benedict, and I know that's not like
Ooh.
a typical dinner, but
I'll
it's
eat it for
so
dinner.
elegant and fancy. I would eat it for dinner as well. Follow it up with some nice creme brulee. I just think that would be the perfect dinner.
Lisa, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Lisa Steele is the creator of the blog Fresh Eggs Daily. She raises chickens. She joined us on this edition of Food Friday to talk about her newest book. It is called The Fresh Eggs Daily Cookbook, over 100 fabulous recipes to use eggs in unexpected ways. You don't have to be done with eggs just because we're done talking about them. You can find a couple recipes from Lisa. We've got the one we talked about, that baked eggs and butternut squash rings. That sounds really good. I'll try that in squash season this fall for sure. And we didn't get to this one, but it's online at WPR.org/foodfriday, a tomato caprese quiche. I like making a good quiche. I've got one in my freezer right now. Again, find both those recipes at WPR.org/foodfriday, and there's still time for you to share your favorite egg dishes, your egg raising, your chicken raising experiences, and hey, maybe some pictures. You can do that on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Get a lively start to your weekdays on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent. Coming up Monday, from Russian threats to old-fashioned cybercrime and online scams, get the latest news from the world of cybersecurity, what it all means for you and your workplace. That's Monday morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Earlier this week, I asked you about Wisconsin-style pizza. A former Wisconsin friend, now in New York City, found it on a menu there. We were both confused. I asked you, is it true? Is there something that counts as Wisconsin-style pizza? If so, what is it? Justin emailed an extensive answer. He writes, it's true. They're right. As far as I could tell, areas of outside of Wisconsin have identified it our style when we weren't even aware of it. He writes, I lived in New York City for 6 years, Philadelphia for 3, born in Madison, where Justin lives again now. I've found numerous examples of Wisconsin-style pizza between the two. It's square-cut, cracker crust, loads of cheese, and you know what? They're right. This is a very common and beloved pizza style all over Wisconsin. I can name many, not exactly something you find in other places. And Justin says, I've lived all over. Justin's been telling people about this since he moved back. We should own it. Thanks, Justin. There you go. Share your Wisconsin-style pizza sightings. Email centraltime@wpr.org. Making pizza history, this is Central Time.